We got some interesting calls from people who not only lived in the Pacific Northwest, people who are visiting there, people who are escaping the heat in the Pacific Northwest to go to Arizona, which is just all kinds of crazy. Trent Ford is on the phone, and Trent is an Illinois state climatologist. And have you, in your lifetime, Trent, seen anything like this in the Pacific Northwest? I don't think so. Have you?
Yeah, hey, Lisa. No, in my lifetime, I have not seen the sort of temperatures and the atmospheric pattern that's set up in the Pacific Northwest, that far north, and even into the the west coast of Canada. It is really something.
So this time of year, it should be about 75, maybe 80 on a big, bright, sunny day when you can see Mount Rainier. And Seattle and Portland have been experiencing temperatures well in excess of 100 degrees. Roads are buckling. Pets are stressing. Older people are being evacuated from nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Is that weather headed our way?
Not really. So actually the weather that we've had this week, which I've been comparing to Florida, you know, it's hot, it's humid, and you can set your watch. It rains every day at 3 p.m. it seems like. That is actually indirectly connected with what's going on in the Pacific Northwest. So the heat, the just absolutely extreme heat that they've been getting from southern Oregon all the way up into British Columbia is due to what we call a big atmospheric ridge, just kind of a bulging of the jet stream northward. And so you think about it, the jet stream moves north, means all the warm, humid, hot air comes up from the tropics, comes up from the south, and makes its way up to areas of the Pacific Northwest that it doesn't usually get to, or very, very rarely gets to. On the backside of that ridge, downstream where we are, further to the east, we're in a trough, which is a dip in the jet stream, just like a ridge in a valley of mountains, you know, we're kind of in that trough, that dip in the jet stream. And so we're getting this frontal boundary that's just sitting here. And it's been sitting here for days and days, bringing pretty heavy rain to the Chicagoland area as well as downstate. But in the next few days, we'll see that frontal boundary start moving off to the east. And that ridge that's been sitting over the Pacific Northwest is going to level out a little bit, both to the east and to the west. Some of that heat that's been packed over the Pacific Northwest will move up to the upper Midwest, but it's not expected that we'll see really extravagant temperatures in the Chicagoland area in the next few days. Actually, because of the movement of this hot, humid air out of the region in the next few days, I think Friday, Saturday look pretty nice, cool and not very humid. And even into next week, temperatures are pretty close to normal. So for two reasons, thankfully, it looks like that those extreme weather conditions in the Pacific Northwest are finally starting to moderate a little bit, although they are expected to see pretty high temperatures for the next week or so. And thankfully for the second piece that we're not going to see that very, very warm air that they've been getting.
As a climatologist, by the way, if you just tuned in, this is Trent Ford, an Illinois state climatologist. As a climatologist, how do you battle the deniers that climate change is happening? What do you say to those people who doubt that this is something that is going to continue to happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's amazing. If you ask 100 climatologists, they'll give you 100 different answers that range from I ignore them to I get on Twitter and spend 6 hours battling it out. and I'm really in between. Any sort of good faith question that comes to me, even if it's a skeptical one, I answer to the best of my abilities and try to engage with that person who may be just hesitant or skeptical that some of the things we're talking about are happening and it's due to human activity. On the other hand, every once in a while we'll get some bad faith questions or folks trying to catch in one way or the other, or maybe even question the way that you do your job, your passion for the job, which in those instances you have to kind of pick and choose where you want to engage. And hopefully, provide somebody a perspective they haven't heard before, and where you may just need to walk away. And especially as a state official, you know, the walking away is always an option that is important because there is a lot of work to be done with climate change and. The conversations around it, what can we do, what do we need to do, who's most at risk, those are conversations that are really needed to be had, and I'm seeing them more and more now, and so that's really where I like my discourse to be.
So are you employed by the state of Illinois?
Yeah, so I am at the Illinois State Water Survey, which is part of the Prairie Research Institute, which is an umbrella branch of the University of Illinois. So I'm based here in Champaign, and so that's a state employee then in that case.
I just heard this. I'm not saying that there's any validity to it, but I was told by some people who are master gardeners and landscapers that the Morton Arboretum or places like that are having to look into the future 70 or 80 years from now, because if they're planting trees, that's part of their planning process, right? They're looking at trees and stuff that might be better suited for Dallas at this point, but they believe that our climate will change that much in the next 70 to 80 years that we'll be planting different trees completely. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, there are certain tree species that are native to Illinois that are expected to deal with increasing temperatures and increasing weather extremes better than others. And I know that the Morton Arboretum and folks like Christy Rowlandson and folks there know that much better than I do about which tree species are expected. But, you know, when folks are thinking about planting a tree, which is great, awesome to increase, you know, the urban canopy and trees in residential areas, we do need to think that, you know, the lifetime of a tree isn't 5 or 10 years like it may be for a shrub, but it could be 70 to 80 to 100 years. And so certainly, you know, any sort of folks who want to put in a tree but want it to be resilient to climate change, to changing temperatures and precipitation, definitely should reach out to the Morton Arboretum, because that's a really great resource we have in the Chicagoland area, and they have their finger on the pulse of how climate change is affecting ecology.
And what is climate change costing us financially? You know, I mean, just buckled roads in the Pacific Northwest, you're in the multi-millions of dollars of repair, and we see constant issues with hurricanes and tornadoes. I mean, is there any price that we've put on what it is costing us yearly in this country to battle it?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I think the science of quantifying the economic costs of climate change has lagged behind the climate science itself, which is a natural progression. We kind of, you know, understand how climate is changing, and then we try to quantify its cost to argue for what we need to do in actions. And so we don't have a great idea of exactly how much it's costing. You mentioned infrastructure. There are estimates and studies that suggest it's hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure damage around the country each year. The recent Illinois Climate Assessment Report that was put out by Nature Conservancy and the Illinois State Water Survey, among others, there was a public health sector or section in that report that suggested, based on studies, that just in individual cities like Chicago or Minneapolis, St. Paul, there is tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars spent just from health care costs due to climate change alone each year. So, you know, when we add up public health costs, infrastructure costs, water quality and quantity costs, all of those agricultural yield costs, those sorts of things, we're talking an enormous amount of money. The problem is, and the difficulty is that a lot of that cost is inherent into the system, so it's a lot more difficult to quantify, but then also communicate that cost to folks.
Exactly. You're listening to Trent Ford. He's an Illinois state climatologist here on the John Williams Show. I'm Lisa Dent. We're talking about the heat wave in the Pacific Northwest. Good news is that he says it's not headed our way. When it comes to the climate changes we're dealing with, and you mentioned public health, is that impacting our allergies? Is it just me, or do they seem to be a little tougher than they were in the past?
No, this year was bad for me. I'm a seasonal allergy person, and I swear I've made the company that makes Zyrtec so much more money this year because I haven't taken it all the time. Yeah, so we have seen historically an increase in pollen allergy season as well as other respiratory allergies, and the projections from models indicate that will continue to increase. So, you know, one of the kind of silver linings of increasing temperatures during the growing season is an increased growing season length, but along with that, it's not just the crops that are able to grow for a longer period of time, but some of our pests as well, including ragweed and other sort of pollen-creating pests. So that is one expected impact for public health, is an increase in exposure to those allergens, and therefore increase respiratory illnesses because of that.
Trent, Paul is on the phone. And Paul, you had a question. What did you want to ask Trent?
Yes, If the United States did everything one asks, how do you handle all the countries that do nothing about it? China, Russia, Eastern Europe?
That seems to be a question a lot of people have. If we're doing our part, how do we try and encourage other people to do their part? And I think we all know the answer. They're going to do what they want to do, right?
Yeah, certainly. You know, diplomacy is not. I'm a climate scientist, not a diplomat. So working with other nations, but I do get this question a lot, not just from nations, but from different states. So if Illinois does everything it needs to, but Indiana doesn't, what do we do in that situation? I think that the biggest thing is that we can control what we can control, and that, you know, research and our understanding of climate change and climate change impacts are not contained within the United States or within Illinois. They're global. And so all other nations are dealing with impacts as well. I think the biggest thing is, again, to do what we can do, what we have control to do, understand that doing so, mitigating and adapting to these impacts of climate change will make our place, you know, whether it be just Illinois or the United States, a more resilient and better place to live in the face of climate change.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on the radio with me today. I appreciate it. Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist, we appreciate your insight. Have a great day, okay?
Hey, thanks, Lisa. Take care.